This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience at a fraction of what you're paying, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WHATTHETECH when you check out. And by Stay Roasted, the ultimate fresh roasted coffee subscription. Get your first bag of coffee for free. You only pay the shipping when you visit stayroasted.com/GFQ. That's stayroasted.com/GFQ.
What the Tech?
Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zirin, and I'm joined by, you know what? I'm not joined by Paul today. Paul cannot make it. Paul is gallivanting around in Europe. He's in Amsterdam right now, but with me is someone even better. Brad Sams from Therot.com. How you doing, Sam? Brad Sams. The Brad Sams. Is this the Brad Sams? BD Sams on Twitter.
That would be, me. BD Sams. Hopefully.
How you doing?
Hopefully nobody's taking over my account.
You can find, Brad does, you do too much, first of all. You're doing too much. You're all over the place. You're on Therot.com. Every article I see is you. Paul is. I don't know what he's doing anymore. But on Therot.com, you do too many stuff. You're doing the First Ring Daily with Paul every day. 33 yep. episodes in. 33 with today's show.
Today was 33.
Episode 33 went up today. You do the Sam's Report, which is a weekly show, and you're writing a lot of stuff. And I'm sure you're going to be doing a whole lot more.
Yeah, I think this is only the beginning. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Do you have a set schedule like that you do every single day? Like on Tuesdays, this is what I'm doing. On Wednesdays, this is what I'm doing. Or is it so hectic where depending on what story comes out?
That would be really nice. It's really honestly just based around the podcast because those are the only things that are set in time that have to occur at a specific hour. And no, an agenda and routine would be nice, but unfortunately that doesn't really work in this industry.
Yeah.
So
wouldn't it be great if you knew what was happening tomorrow?
Yeah, it's very rare. That's on occasion that does happen. That's what people call embargoed news.
Yeah.
Where Microsoft will send us news and say, you know what, this goes live Thursday. And that's the greatest thing ever because then it's not, I have 15 minutes to write this. I have, 24 hours to get it done.
So. Is that kind of hard though? I know this isn't really what we're talking about today, but is that hard when you're sitting on embargoed stories if it's a couple days and you're doing, topical stuff every day and you're doing a podcast? Does it kind of enter into your mind and you got to self-censor?
Yeah, it becomes an issue a couple different ways. If it's a big news item and then something leaks early and you're sitting under an embargo and it's a gray area. Like if I have Microsoft's coming out with a new hardware product and I know that's happening on Wednesday and Tuesday at noon, information about it leaks and it's all right. The question becomes, can I write that?
Yeah.
Even though I've already agreed to an embargo, somebody else wrote it up. And that's when it can become really difficult because you got to make those decisions where do I want to piss off Microsoft and cover this it's out there? Or do I want to, wait and then talk about it?
Other things that
can be difficult, like that Surface Book back there is actually the, the new one, the performance-based one. And I've had that for like 10 days now. And we kept talking about it. But you're not supposed to tell anybody you have it until the embargo lifts, so.
So you could talk about it, but you can't show it and say that you have it.
Right, exactly.
Which we should talk about that today. I didn't put it in the notes, but we should talk about the performance-based Surface Book. I have a lot of questions about it. Guys, sure. By the way, Therot.com, Therot Premium, everybody should go there and sign up. I'm a Therot Premium subscriber. I've signed on. Very easy. Click on the Join Premium tab right on top, and guess what? You could pay $7 a month.
Yeah, we finally get the monthly working now.
The monthly's up and running. Or you pay $64 for the year, $64, and you're getting a tremendous amount of content every single day. You get the First Ring Daily podcast. You get access to the premium forums, a quarterly Health of Tech report, the Therot Daily newsletter, premium comments, and a whole lot more. And I'm sure a lot more is on its way. These articles, by the way, these Therot Premium articles are well worth it. There's been numerous amounts of them that I've clicked on the link and I saw that it was premium and I read the entire story and man, you know what? Some of this stuff is great stuff. Almost all of it, actually. I'm interested in almost all of it, except for Paul's. No, which is it's all Paul. He had an interesting story on Throb Premium the other day about how he almost died in Colorado, mm-hmm. and that was a premium article, and it was a really interesting story how Google saved his life. So, go to throbot.com, sign up for the premium service. Brad's working hard there, and Paul's working hard, and the entire staff.
The best part of the whole premium thing, and I do this on many. I do this in apps. I do this on other websites. No ads. That mm-hmm. like if nothing else, there's no freaking ads on.
You know
the
what?
Site.
That's the one thing I always forget to sell is the fact that there's no advertising when you pay for premium.
That great. In alone is what drives me to buy things on other sites, in-app purchases and all that stuff. It's just no ads. Like I hate being bombarded with banners every single day on every single thing that you use. And so finding a way to directly give back and, I don't know, down with the ads.
Talking about no ads, let's take a moment and talk about our sponsor, and that's Harry's.
Nicely done.
We're talking about pop-up ads, right? We're talking about things that you don't, you know, banner ads and pop-up ads and all this stuff. But when we're talking about stuff like Harry's and what they're offering you, it's really worth it. Because here's the thing. If you go to harrys.com right now, you get the free trial set and the post-shaving balm with the coupon code WhatTheTech at checkout. We've been talking about Harry's for a long time. Paul has a Harry's razor. Brad, do you have a Harry's razor?
I do not.
You do not. And you know what? Now we have to. You know what, Harry's? You're probably listening to this. Let's get Brad a Harry's razor and get him on board with this, because this is the greatest razor I've ever used in my life. I leave a beard, so I don't shave every day, right? But I still have to clean up. I got to, you know, clean up the sides. I got to clean up the bottom. I've been using the same branded razor since I was like 5, because I started shaving when I was 5 years old. Actually, I came out with a beard when I was born, but since I was 5, I've been since I was like a teenager, you know, I've been using the same type of razor. And the reason why is because I can't do those crazy 15-blade razors. They tear my entire face apart. It just doesn't work for me. So I've been using these very thin razors where you can kind of get in. You know, I always leave some sort of facial hair. I stopped using them about a year ago, totally. I mean, I was using my hair razors, but I totally stopped using them because they've gotten so cheap. After one shave, literally, you're throwing these things away. They're true to what they are, and that's disposable. I've been using the same blade with my Harry's razor for, I can't even tell you, a couple months now. And this thing is perfect. And they've made the greatest changes. Now they have a, it's a softer flex hinge, so it's a more comfortable blade. It's the base of the thing has a grip on it now. It has a rubberized grip, so it's not flying around anywhere. It is so good. It's a textured handle. That's the word I'm using. The blades are just $2 per blade compared to the $4 that you're going to pay at the drugstore. The list goes on and why you should do this. And by the way, Christmas is coming. Holidays are coming. Get the person in your life that you love, because you don't want them to suffer when they're shaving, a Harry's razor. Go to harrys.com. Claim your free trial set and post-shaving balm when you use the coupon code WhatTheTech. Also, you know what? If you're just looking to buy, also, this is a great gift. I don't get credit for that. That's not what the coupon code is, but I'm just telling you, if you want to buy somebody a great gift for the holidays, I have another one coming up. I got another live read in a little bit, and I'm going to tell you another great gift. Harry's razor is the best. Harry's.com/Harry's.com. Use the coupon code WhatTheTech at checkout. I want to thank Harry's for supporting the show. So Brad, you did First Ring Daily today. I was producing it today, and you brought up something yesterday on the show, and you were talking about the new MacBook Pros.
Yep.
And a lot. This is, you know, I'm really surprised at the integrity of some journalists, and I'll tell you why. I thought this thing was going to be a slam dunk review.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what happens every year. That MacBook that came out was a year and a half ago now. The keyboard was terrible on this thing. It's terrible. The reason why I have a MacBook is because I know the consistency within their product line, and I know that the trackpad is going to be good, and the keyboard is always going to be good, no matter which year device I buy. They've kind of that's out the window now with this MacBook Pro. The biggest complaint, and personally, people that I know and I respect all say the keyboard is not good at all. Even though it's better than the MacBook, it's not good at all. Compared to previous generation MacBook Pros. And the trackpad, and I was surprised at this complaint, the trackpad is way too big.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
The touch bar thing, it's still new. It's still something new. And the story goes that Apple tried touchscreen and it didn't work on the Mac. Just wasn't for them. So what do you make of this? I mean, the fact that there are a lot of negative reviews on this product, do you think it's, you know, the allure for Apple was that they're making beautiful devices and they're
right.
premium, they're good devices. You're not going to buy a MacBook Pro and say, well, this is another piece of crap. I don't mm-hmm. like, it's designed poorly. It's a bad device. Nobody's going to say that.
Yep.
They're good devices, whether you like Apple or not. They're really good devices. But now, it's a very different world we're in since the last redesign of the MacBook.
Sure.
Everybody's making good PCs now. HP has yep. beautiful PCs, laptops out there. Yep. Microsoft is in the game with a beautiful laptop.
Yep.
Does negative press like this impact the overall mystique of Apple, of the Apple line, the premiumness of the Apple line?
So this MacBook Pro is really, really interesting for a multitude of reasons. One, the four ports that come on the higher end, I'm actually okay with. I know dongles and dongle gate or whatever the hell you want to call it has been a big deal. But to yeah. be honest, that's the only way we're ever going to get to a single standardized port is for somebody to go first. If we milk it along where we have three of these and then a VGA and then an HDMI and an SD card, yeah. it's just going to take a very long time to get there. And Apple's always done this. So that's not surprising. And I honestly don't have too big of an issue for that. It's going to be a teething thing. It's going to take some time. But by the end of this product's life cycle, we're going to get to it and be like, you know what? That actually makes a lot of sense. So that I'm okay with. Although I think an SD card slot may have been a little oversight.
Paul and I totally have butted heads on this. Mm-hmm. I agree that I'm glad they took the initiative to jump ahead to USB Type-C. That
sure.
that type of port. I'm glad they did because it makes a lot of sense. One device, one type of connector for everything, right?
Right.
Where I have an issue with, what I have an issue with is the fact that they're not providing you with one dongle. You know what I mean? Like they're
yeah.
not giving you just the one, because most people aren't plugging in four or five
yeah.
things. Maybe it's one thing at a time that they're using. You know, like if I'm going to yep. use a webcam, I'm going to plug in a webcam and maybe a mic. Okay, so fine. They give me one and I go and buy the other one. But yep. instead, it's this cold turkey mentality where, no, you have to go buy the dongle. The other problem that I have seen, and I didn't even realize this was an issue until people that have used the product have told me, they're not giving you. So for the Mac, if you guys could see this, if I could pull this out here. There's two types. So they got, this is connector, right? Like this is the brick. This is the power brick.
Yep.
This normally comes with just another connector that you plug into the power. And then they
yeah.
also provide this thicker cable, which is the extender, which almost
yep.
everybody that I know connects the extender and that's it. They don't
sure.
just use the other one. They're not giving you an extender anymore. $20 to buy the extender.
Ooh, I didn't actually know that. That's,
yeah,
that's crap.
And they're charging you $200 more.
In the box, they should have included a USB Type-C to just a standard USB hub that'll allow you to connect like three devices up. And if you need more than that, so be it. That they could have solved
nice.
A lot of angst if they would have just done that, but that's not proper. That's not how Apple does things.
Yeah.
It was very surprising they actually included an adapter with the iPhone.
They gave the adapter for the iPhone for the headphone jack.
Sure.
But how about this? You go and I'm telling you right now, and Paul mocks me for saying this. and he'll bust my balls for this, but I gave the perfect scenario. Most people that are going and buying this have no idea what USB Type-C connector is, what Thunderbolt connectors are. They don't know
yeah.
it's backwards compatible. They don't know any of that. And I don't blame them for not knowing. They go into the Apple store. They buy their new MacBook or someone gives them a new MacBook. And then they
mm-hmm.
have their iPhone and they want to connect their iPhone to their MacBook.
Yeah.
And they can't.
Yep. So I can guarantee you what's going to happen next, though. When they come out with the iPhone 8, it will probably still have the Lightning port, but the cable inside will be a USB Type-C.
Yeah.
And that'll go into that little wall wart that'll turn into a traditional charger, but I guarantee you that's what the iPhone 8 is.
Oh, absolutely. They have to. They have to do that.
Yep.
It kind of sucks now that they have that proprietary Lightning port, right? The Lightning
yep.
connector instead of USB Type-C, considering that's where they're headed with their entire line.
Which, I mean, in theory, they could change, but I think the USB Type C is a little large for their phone.
Yeah. It might be a little
so it might
fat.
Be like literally too thick.
Yeah.
So they might be waiting for a revision or until they get their head out of their ass and actually, you know, do a standardization yeah. of their ports and all that. But the rest of the book, I think, is okay. You're right. The mixed reviews are interesting. So people are saying that the trackpad is the size of Texas, which is actually too large. And I agree, there is an upper bound on how large you can make these things because it just starts getting in the way. They're all about gestures and whatnot. And then the keyboard, this actually really pisses me off. I love Apple keyboards. I have an older MacBook Pro upstairs, and I love typing on that thing. The Surface Book is okay. My mechanical keyboard is good. But on a laptop, it's great, and they're screwing with it. And I don't think they realize how good they had it. And they're like, you know what? People will just adapt. I'm like, So you've got an awkward-sized trackpad, a keyboard that's just not as great. And then you have the touch bar. The touch bar is – I have really mixed opinions on this because in some aspects I can see how it's functional. But at the same time, keyboard shortcuts are always going to be faster. Like, for example, if you're typing in Word and you can hit bold on the touch bar, Control-B is still going to be faster.
Yeah.
So it's – And well, then,
you also know where control is and where B is, right? Because you've been typing for 20 years.
And then
people now have to look down at the keyboard to figure this out.
Which we've been trained for 30 plus years not to do that. And then so the counter argument of that is okay, the touch bar when you're typing in Word will have things that aren't keyboard accessible. Well, if they're not keyboard accessible, I can tell you then they're very rarely used. So why the value of that scenario is not great. I understand how scrubbing through video and music can be kind of interesting, but at the same time, you got to look down. And if you're looking down to find out where things are, it's just not a natural experience. So I think it was a solution looking for a problem. And I think they said, you know what, screw it. We're not going to do a touchscreen because we've come out publicly against that and we can't go back on our word. So we'll put a touchscreen on the keyboard and we'll go with that.
I believe Schiller was interviewed, right? Did you see that interview with Phil Schiller regarding why they haven't gone to touchscreen and how they actually had prototypes. For 3 years, they were working on a touchscreen MacBook Pro. And for 3 years, they had this made and they were working around it. And the engineers are trying to modify it and are working with Mac OS and trying to come up with this phenomenon of an operating system for touchscreen. And he said it just didn't work on the Mac. That is such a cop-out answer to me.
It is.
That it didn't work on the Mac. If it worked on Windows, right? Windows 10, Windows 7, Windows XP had touchscreen. Yeah, it sucked. It wasn't good. They kind of got it in Windows 8, but Windows 10 is a traditional operating system in every meaning of the word. It's still the X on the top that you got to click on and you got to, it's a traditional Windows operating system. Not very different than the Mac. Why does it work on Windows and it wouldn't work on the Mac?
That's a question that was answered by marketing, is what that was.
Yeah.
And so let's just pretend that they did introduce a touchscreen Mac that still had the touch bar. They don't lose anything for this. And it's not like they were promoting that the display on the MacBook Pro was some revolutionary thing like they were on the Surface Studio. So it's an arrogance decision that they think that they know what's better for the user than the user knows what's better for them. And granted, that's how Apple's operated since it's pretty much inception with Jobs. But I think people do want a touchscreen laptop because they work. And regardless if it's not something you use every single interaction with, it's still nice to have for when you need it. And Apple is not going to go to the level of convenience just because it's nice to have. Yeah. They need to sell it at $1 million price point or they're not going to do it at all. And that's what we saw with the touch bar.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept. And by the way, I mean, I'm talking about it based on what I've seen and what I have read. I do think that touch bar does have a very good case usage, scenario for many people. It exists. And the more development that goes into this over the next year or so, and the more third parties start developing for it, it'll get better and better. And in a year from now, this may be a very different discussion that we're having. Lenovo did this a while ago, but it was more of a static e-ink display. But when we see HP start developing for this, and Samsung and Asus, it may be a very different discussion that we're having in a year from now. Because I will guarantee that we will see other manufacturers trying to put this in.
Oh, I guarantee it too. But the question becomes, is it truly a value add or is it just a feature that's on a checklist that becomes something you have to do? Yeah. to build a modern laptop. And so I think the jury's still out on that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, but I was very surprised at the amount of negativity regarding the product. I will be using it in probably in a couple days. I'll probably get my hands on it and use it. If you're watching live, by the way, live stream is not working. It's down. I'm getting this weird error constantly, so I have to restart it. So if you're watching this, I'm sorry. Things are breaking here. Brad, let's talk about the Xbox. 15 years ago, it's been 15 years for the Xbox.
This good old guy. Well, yeah. This is actually the new controller.
That's a new one. What I want to ask you is, this is interesting. You know, Microsoft gets so much crap for screwing things up.
Which they deserve.
Which, you know what, they deserve. But the last 2 weeks I've had, since I had to upgrade my production machines to anniversary, I've had nothing but problems. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a minority here because I have a very specific use case and I use things very differently and I get it and it's fine. But there are other people like me. The fact that I'm going back for 10 years. My AMD video card drivers don't work properly in anniversary compared to working properly in Windows 10. Some driver issues, some security issues. Did you hear about what I had to do to get my capture cards to work?
No.
I had to disable Secure Boot.
Oh, really?
I had to disable Secure Boot in order to disable authentication for digital signature on drivers.
Gotcha.
Because the drivers haven't been updated yet. Mm-hmm. So it was a whole thing that I had to do. But it was, you know, that was my complaint the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But Windows 10 is a great operating system. This is, I mean, they've really leaped ahead with this. It's better than 8. It's mm-hmm. When I use Windows 7, it feels like a dated, older operating system, very similar to how I felt with XP. But the one thing that they've always done right, except for the red ring issue, generally, the thing that they have always done right is Xbox.
Yeah.
Why is that so separate from the rest of the company? Why is that it's an interesting case study because this company is spreading itself amongst hardware, software, mm-hmm. enterprise, cloud. But the Xbox has always been positive, I mean, in every sense. Sure. I mean, they had a hardware issue. We get it. It happened. But overall, use case, software, hardware, it's always been pretty consistent. Why is that? Why is that the Xbox for 15 years has had a tremendous climb in the gaming sector when people said they can't do it?
It's because they own the entire experience. And I think that's why they're optimistic in the Surface. You got to remember, with the Xbox, everything about it is custom. Microsoft is responsible. I mean, not the actual chip fabrication, but Microsoft is responsible for just about everything in that, from the hardware design to the software design to the motherboard design to I even think they get into the chip design. I believe AMD has been traditionally the manufacturer of their general processing units, but Microsoft is calling the shots on that. And so when they get to control everything, it's a lot easier. And you got to remember, too, the permutations of the Xbox, just any Xbox, is very, very small. So it's not like Windows where they have hundreds of thousands of iterations of a device. Even on phones, there's a very small hardware differences between devices. And even in those cases, it's probably 99% the same. And so it's much, much easier to build on that type of stuff and ship and code and do all that, because it's like, hey, Xbox One, oh God, I want to say there's about like 5 different versions of it. Not hardware differences, but like actual internals where they've modified things and updated stuff. Because it's if you go buy an older, larger Xbox One today, it's not the same thing they shipped initially. They've made some modifications already. But they own the whole experience. So it's a lot easier. That's why Apple's stuff, I mean, for the most part, has always been higher quality. It's because they own the whole kit. They own the whole process. And when you own that, it's so much easier to build, test, and ship than when 6 different companies are involved with one single process. So yeah. I think that's why. And I think that's honestly part of the reasons, one of the many reasons why Microsoft eventually started building Surface, is because they own the entire process. And they said, hey, you know what? I think we can build a better laptop and actually compete in that premium market. And I think they've actually shown that they have, now that they've kind of got the solutions figured out.
You know, I'm because we're around the same age, you and I. Yep. Do you remember when Microsoft announced that they were getting into gaming and they were coming up with the Xbox? Do you remember the negative? I mean, people were saying that it's impossible. There's no way Microsoft is going to be able to beat the PlayStation. It's impossible that they're going to come in and take over Nintendo. And they've really, I mean, they're neck and neck pretty much, right? The PlayStation is neck and neck with the Xbox as far as units sold. It's close. It's still going up and down. But
PlayStation's actually beating Xbox pretty bad.
But is it really? Has it gotten really bad?
Yeah, it's about 2-1.
Okay,
roughly,
so 2-1.
But I still think that they've sold roughly 20 million of these things.
Okay, so
roughly.
20 million of them. So also, they had a year advantage and the pricing. It was a lot of stuff. And
Microsoft screwed up their launch.
Yeah, terrible. It was terrible. They really put that pressure on Kinect and trying to push Kinect and all that stuff, but it didn't work. But when you talk about the Xbox, I remember how negative everybody was on this thing, and they didn't really understand what it was going to be and how it was going to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is, for me, the thing that sold it was their live, Xbox Live.
Yeah, that was their differentiator. I mean, it took them, I think it was like 2 years after it came out before it was finalized. I mean, it was in beta, I think, when it launched or close to it. But that's what they did, right? If you remember, Nintendo, even with the Wii, I don't know about the Wii U, but terrible online experience just trying to add friends.
Still like that.
That infrastructure is just garbage. Sony's finally got some good mojo behind them with their, what is it called, PlayStation Plus or something like that. I can never remember their name. Their online experience is actually finally now kind of up to snuff. But that's what Microsoft can do, is they can build that online architecture, and that's what they saw as their differentiator from day one, at least when they were building this out. It says, hey, look, we can go build, essentially, the first one was really just a PC in a box. I mean, most of them still are today. I said, that's no problem. That's easy to build. What people can't build is what we can do well, is that infrastructure. And that's what Xbox Live has been for Microsoft, 47-ish million subscribers. I mean, that's nothing to snuff at right there. So that's why they've done well. That's why Sega it no longer makes hardware. I don't know what they make anymore. I guess it's just games.
They license stuff. They have a couple. They have a couple things like licensing agreements, and they still own certain franchises, right?
Yeah, and so that's, and then Sony. I don't know. I mean, that's what Microsoft did. That was their differentiator, and that it worked out really well. And it also helps that Microsoft has the money to throw behind this stuff, right? You look at a company like Nintendo. Granted, Nintendo has a lot of money, but Nintendo is dependent on game and hardware sales. If Microsoft had zero games and zero hardware sales, they would still make $4 billion in net income in the quarter from their other services.
Yeah, tremendous.
So that's the big advantage Microsoft has when it goes into a market. It says, hey, this new market, like the Surface line, we don't need this to make money. We can kind of fight through that. And that's what they did with Xbox, is they just put a lot of money behind it, a lot of marketing, gave it enough time, and the competitors couldn't compete. Microsoft was just very adamant on what they were doing, and it worked. And so the problem is that they got cocky and said, hey, look, we were late with the console market, we can be late to the smartphone market, we can be late to the search engine market, and it'll be fine, we'll put enough money behind it. And it doesn't always work out that way.
Well, the phone is a perfect example of this.
I'm
still a little surprised at how Microsoft fell flat on their face with the phone.
Hardware
was great, the software was great. It just, they couldn't come up with an ecosystem that enticed developers to develop for. And that's alarming that a company like Microsoft couldn't get that aspect of it.
This kind of actually goes back to the Xbox a little bit. When the Xbox launched, Microsoft was a completely different company. This was early 2000s. They were around the antitrust stuff. Microsoft wasn't always looked favorably upon. So from the outsider perspective, a lot of people didn't like Microsoft. They said, you're a big bully. You're just going to come in and just run over markets, take over, and screw over the little guy. And so they didn't really do that in the gaming sector too much, but they had done it in other areas like Office and web browsers and all that. And so people are like, Microsoft. So when the phone came about, it was Microsoft was still in this kind of recovery mode from people hating the company. And what Microsoft unfortunately needed for the phone to succeed, unlike Xbox, is independent developers to build apps. And those independent developers did not like Microsoft. They didn't have a market share. And so why were they going to waste their time supporting a company they didn't like, that had potentially screwed over them or screwed over their applications at some point? And so there was just like the perfect storm for Windows Phone to completely fail like it has.
What's the future of Windows Phone at this point? They're just going to put something out every 18 to 24 months? And
this guy just came out on T-Mobile, the Alcatel Idol 4S.
Yeah.
So the future of Windows Phone is not phone. It's they need to keep it alive because it's interesting to always have options. So what people fail to realize is that, right, these guys just run on ARM chips. So Windows running on here, which Windows 10 does, is just Windows on ARM. So they need to keep it alive for that standpoint to see what happens with ARM. Also, cellular connectivity is built into the ARM version of Windows. So they need to keep it alive from that aspect just to see if anything comes about. But really, the future is just when this truly is your PC, when you need a full-fledged PC in your pocket, Windows will have the advantage there compared to, say, iOS or Android, at least at this time. Yeah. If that market, here's what's kind of concerning. If that market that I just described, the phone turning into a PC, and all you do is you come home and it's got two USB-C ports on here and you plug it into your two monitors and that's it. If that market takes a decade to materialize, Microsoft's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, well, I think the story here is the article that you possibly will write in about 5 to 10 years is Intel the reason Windows Phone failed? You know,
sure.
I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, there's a lot of factors here. The thing that, you're right, the thing that separated Windows Phone from iOS and from Android is the fact that it could be a computer, right? It could be an all-in-one device. And unfortunately, even with ARM, the real device that we want is an Intel-based device. Mm-hmm. And Intel's put this project on the back burner. Their mobile chipsets are on the back burner right now.
Yep.
They have not gotten this. Intel's having a lot of problems developing for mobile. And I don't know if they will, by the time that they get their mobile chipset, if it will matter at all at that point.
Yeah. So, and I love to stroke my own ego as many writers like to do. I wrote
Please,
a really
go
good article. Oh gosh, it was probably 3 years ago. I'm ballparking the time frame, but it was right around the time Windows RT was coming about. And I wrote kind of an editorial that said, there's a race going on, and it's, can ARM chips scale up in horsepower faster than Intel can scale down in thermal usage? Mm. And that's what we've learned, is that no, Intel can't scale down. ARM scaled up faster than Intel could, and that's why Intel is completely locked out of the mobile segment. And so the next question is how high can ARM chips raise the bar in their horsepower? Can they truly become a desktop class operating or a desktop class chip? If they can, Intel's going to be in a whole shitload of trouble then, because Microsoft could effectively dump Intel if they it's not an overnight type thing, but they're keeping Windows on ARM alive because they could effectively dump Intel and get super low cost machines with high horsepower. We all know that Apple, essentially the iPhones run on ARM based chips. They might be custom Apple chips, but they're ARM chips, and Chrome runs on ARM chips, Chrome OS.
Yeah.
So if these chips get to that level where it's like, you know what, this is really fine for a desktop PC for a low end market, Intel's got to be getting nervous about that.
Yeah, I don't see. On the desktop, you know, you're always going to want horsepower, and Intel, you know, Intel has kind of slowed down as far as development goes, as far as, you know, performance boosts is over the last 5-6 years. It's kind of slowed down. If you look at it, those initial i7s, those 2700s and those 2600s, those are great chips. And you were so much better than what AMD was doing. It was so much better than the previous generation Intel chipsets, where it was a noticeable difference. I have the latest I have a Haswell E. I didn't go to Skylake, but I have a Haswell E chipset, and I have to tell you, the performance boost, 10-15%, 20% maybe. It's not this, oh my gosh, what a big difference. And when you're slower to adopt new technology, that's when it really hurts these companies.
Yep.
You know, when there's no reason for you to, you know, I have a 2012 MacBook Pro, and I got a 2015 MacBook Pro, and I have to tell you, performance-wise, they're exactly the same.
Yeah. Well, the bottleneck for many, many, many years wasn't the chip. It was the hard drive, right? We were locked into these 5400 on a laptop, maybe 7200 RPM hard drives if you're lucky. And then as soon as you swap, like, you can go take an old MacBook Pro that has a spinny platter drive and put an SSD in there, and it'll be great for years to come.
Yeah. I've actually done that to all my old laptops now. Yeah. Every single one of them, I have a Lenovo here that's 2011. I have another laptop here. I swapped all the SSD, all the 5400, 7200 RPM hard drives out, and I put SSDs in that thing, and it's running unbelievably.
Yeah. which you bringing up AMD actually raises a really interesting question. If AMD was smart right now, obviously they're not going to win the horsepower game against Intel. They lost that battle, right? They're in the low class economy section for most of their chips. Someone's going to email me and say, they still have their bulldozers and they're good and whatever. If I was AMD, I would be investing a significant amount of money in trying to build an x86 chip that fits in a phone. Because Intel said they can't do it.
But they also have that thermal problem. They have a tremendous problem with that because the AMD chips run. You know how I'm going to tell you. You know what AMD should do if they're smart? If they're really smart, this is exactly what they should do. Forget about the PC. They got to get into portable heaters. Okay? You're cold in the winter. Your heat's not working right. You know what you do? Take a desktop. Take an AMD desktop. Maybe something from maybe 2-3 years old. Put it right by your feet. You heat up this entire house. You could heat up a 4,800 square foot house with two AMD machines. I'm telling you, it's super easy.
Yeah.
Forget about the PC. Get into the heating market. They have the same problem though. And it's far worse for them because
which is why they need to make the investments. I mean, a lot of these companies getting caught up and saying, "Hey, we need the latest and greatest to be mobile." If they took a chip from like 2 years ago and figured out how to get the thermal capacity down to a reasonable level, I think it would kill it in the smartphones because people want something that's different, and that would be a differentiator for them. I don't know. I think that's a huge untapped market is the difference between ARM and Intel on a mobile phone. I know we've seen that Dell tried it. Microsoft, I believe, tried it and couldn't get it to work. So whoever figures this out, and maybe there has to be a solution at some point, whoever figures it out is going to make a bundle of money. It's just who's willing to invest significant capital for many, many years to get there.
Well, people kind of forget why Intel had such a surge over the last in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. And it really had to do with buying that company out in Israel.
Yeah.
That really, they were getting their butts handed to them by AMD. AMD had cheaper chips, faster chips, cooler chip. Well, not necessarily cooler, but I mean, it was everything and a little more because it was inexpensive. You could buy the top of the line AMD Athlon for a I would say at least 25% less, maybe half of the cost of an Intel chipset. That was a major, major selling point here. The performance was great on these chips and you didn't have to go to Intel, but Intel came out. They bought this company with those, with the dual core technology, the multiple cores. And that's essentially what we're still running on. That's the whole entire i7 line.
Yep.
Maybe that's the answer for them to buy a chip manufacturer.
I was wondering that too, as we were talking, it's like, would they ever buy like NVIDIA?
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Yeah. Well, I don't know if AMD bought ATI, right?
I don't know if that's like an antitrust thing at that point, which could be kind of floating over their head thinking, we're the world's largest chip maker and we're going to buy the world's largest graphics chip maker. That might be an issue.
Who bought Voodoo? Do you remember that?
HP bought Voodoo.
HP bought Voodoo and did nothing with it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to bring it back. I actually know their founder, Raoul Su.
Are they really?
I've met him a couple times, actually. I chat with him not frequently. He used to work at Microsoft for a while and ran their entrepreneurial program. And I went up there and I've chatted with him a couple times. He's a great guy. He launched he left Microsoft and started, it's a gambling site, but you bet on esports.
Oh, that's interesting, actually.
It's called Unicorn, I believe. So I think he's doing well. And he started Voodoo out of his garage and then sold it to HP for a gargantuan amount of money, I assume, because I believe he drives a Ferrari.
Yeah, so. I had a Voodoo 2. 3DFX, that was a company. 3DFX is the company, yeah. I had a Voodoo 2. I loved that. That was a great card.
Yeah.
My God. It's amazing how computing has changed and all this has become so dumbed down and simplified. It's essentially an appliance now.
Yeah.
Everything is an appliance. It's unbelievable. I have a lot more to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about Twitter a little bit because of the positive changes they're making, hopefully because they're trying to get bought and it's going to kind of push more positive changes to this company because they're having a hell of a time selling this company. Also, I want to talk to you about Kaspersky and a couple other things. But before we do that, I want to introduce a new sponsor to the show, and that's Stay Roasted. I actually have something great here. This is coffee. I'm a huge coffee drinker. If you guys notice, this is not vodka in this cup. It's coffee every time. Look, you can see on the bottom, almost done. I'm going to spill it. There you go. My Therat mug, by the way. I'm a big coffee drinker, and I love really good quality coffee. And I hate going to the store to buy coffee, and I hate going to Amazon and ordering coffee because I constantly forget to order it. Stay Roasted is a subscription service for your coffee, and they have a great deal for our audience. You get a free bag of coffee. You only pay the shipping when you visit stayroasted.com/GFQ. That's stayroasted.com/GFQ. And these are, and the way that it works, it's actually great. You go to the website, you sign up, or you click through, and you pick how many bags of coffee you want and how often. So you can do 3 bags, you can do 2 bags, you can do 1 bag, weekly, biweekly, once a month. The opportunities are endless. Then you go down, and then you pick what kind of roast you want. You want a dark roast, a medium roast, a light roast. You want a blend. They have so many different combinations for you to pick, and they let you pick from dozens of top American crafted coffee roasters for your personal taste. Doesn't matter what it is. Stay Roasted plans start at only 60 cents per brew, per cup. 60 cents per brew cup, I'm sorry. And there's no commitment at all. This is the great part. Try it yourself. Visit stayroasted.com/GFQ. Get your first bag of coffee for free. You only pay the shipping. And then 15% off any additional bag, which is a great deal. Also, they do gift cards that are available. This is a great gift to give somebody in your family that's a coffee drinker. They also have decaf. I'm going to go and order a decaf one for my wife because she's not really drinking coffee right now. Stayroasted.com/GFQ. I want to thank them for supporting the show. So you're kind of like me in the public light, right? You write a
something
lot.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that, which it's still a little bizarre, right? Do you find that to be weird?
Yeah, it's my wife doesn't. Well, my wife gets it.
Your wife doesn't know what kind of celebrity you are?
Well, I'll tell you what was really kind of odd is my wife changed jobs. I don't know. It was like two, three. Oh, God, it's probably been 3 years ago now. And one of her coworkers who works in IT had no idea that I lived in Cincinnati. And then went up to my wife and said, Are you related to Brad? And she's like, how the hell do you know? And he's like, I've been reading his stuff for years.
Oh, my God. And that's the best. How great did you feel when she told you?
Well, first off, my wife comes home and she's like, you're not going to believe this. Like, somebody actually knew who you were. I'm like, yeah. You know, like, some people read this stuff. For the most part, it's not really a big deal. The only time you ever kind of get and caught up, and it's the wrong word, is actually when you go to a Microsoft conference. Like, when you go to Build or Ignite. That's kind of when it's like, okay, this, like, people actually read this stuff. These are the people who shit post all day long.
You got
an
extra little hop in your walk when that happens, right?
Yeah. It's fun. Like, I love meeting people who read the stuff and give good feedback. Like, I'm going over to London, in about, 10, 12 days from now. And I'm going to meet up with some people and it'll be fun. But I don't know. Like, I don't think anything different of it, right? All I do is write some words on the internet. Microsoft responds. Microsoft makes fun of me on stage. Life goes on.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how it works. Like, I've been doing the tech stuff with Paul, I want to say 5-6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. We do these events, these meet and greets, and, people watch a show, and I get the emails.
Sure.
I get people that come up and go, hey, I know What the Tech. I watch What the Tech. My wife went and framed a locally here, the Queen's Courier in Queens, New York.
Mm-hmm.
They put me on the front page, and they did this whole thing about GFQ and this whole thing. So my wife went to go frame it, and there was a guy at the framing store, and he's a big fan of What the Tech. Huge fan of What the Tech. Oh my God, Paul and Andrew's your husband. Oh my God. So that's awesome when that happens. I have to tell you, and What the Tech is my biggest show. It's a fraction compared to the wrestling stuff.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre to me still. It's really, really bizarre, the wrestling stuff. But here's the difference. For whatever reason, in the wrestling world, I don't get a lot of negative feedback. Mm-hmm. I don't get a lot of the negativity. It doesn't really seep into my personal account. For some odd reason, the tech stuff, however, becomes very personal.
It does. Like, it becomes, people get very offended.
Very offended. Like, the wrestling stuff, not so much. I guess because, I don't know, it's fake, It's a play. It's theatrics. It's a television
show. It's entertainment.
It doesn't really become this, go to hell, you're wrong, your opinion is wrong. But on the tech stuff, it becomes very personal. And it's at the end of the day, you know what I tell people? It's only tech. It's only it's only devices. It's gadgets. It's phones. Who cares what you use? I use a MacBook. Who cares? You use a Surface, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Right.
It's whatever gets you through the day and whatever helps you with your productivity. But it becomes very personal. And I've seen it happen to you. I've been tagged in stuff that you've been tagged in on Twitter where people are just losing their minds and they're screaming about the Illuminati and they're saying that the moon landing didn't happen. It gets really nutty. And by the way, this is a real example that I'm saying. I don't know if you saw it, Brad. This is a real example where a guy is losing his mind and calling me a shill and how I'm an idiot and Windows, Microsoft is crumbling and nobody needs it. You could use Linux, all this stuff, and going on and on. And then I look on his feed, his Twitter feed, and this guy is writing to the BBC and he's writing to all these news organizations talking about how the moon landing wasn't real and it's staged. And when you're talking about the moon landing and reptilians, you know, being presidential nominees, I'm kind of going to back up and say, okay, there's no arguing with you. Unfortunately, I sometimes take the bait, which you're a little better at, and Paul's much better at than I think both of us at this. Yeah. But sometimes I want to know why someone feels that way, and then it just plummets. The conversation goes totally off the handle. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wish that I could. So that's easy, right? You just block the person and you never have to see a thing again.
Yep.
This presidential election, I don't care what side you're on, has really brought the crazy out of people. Really, yeah, it's gotten
a little bit. Just a little bit.
It's gotten, I mean, to the point that we're going off on a tangent here, but this is going to get back into this. I swear to you, we're getting back into the topic here. I wrote something, Brian Brushwood, which I don't know if you know Brian. Do you know Brian?
I don't.
Very good guy. He does a whole bunch of stuff. He was on Twit. He does his own thing now. Hosts a scam school, Night Attack, one of my good friends. He wrote something like, you know, in a time like this, we got to come together as a society, you know, kumbaya. This is very positive, uplifting tweet. And I retweeted it. This guy, one of my viewers, lost his freaking mind. You elitist, you privilege this, and that. I mean, just totally went bonkers.
Sure.
That's easy. You block that. But there are times that, the last couple days I really have wished for a mute button on words. Like, I don't want to see Trump. I don't want to see Hillary. I don't want to see election at all. I just want to go back to my world where I post pictures of what I'm eating that day. I'm so over a lot of it. And I know people are going to say, well, it's important to be informed. Yes, it is. But it's not. I don't care to get Joe Schmo's political opinion on this. I'm tired of it at this point. What they've done is they now allow you to mute keywords for a certain time.
Yep, finally.
So how does this
work? Third-party apps have allowed that for a while. I don't know what's taken them so long to get around to this stuff. Probably because they were hoping that someone was going to buy them and it would have been their problem. Maybe that's their, maybe that was their kind of exit strategy. Now that that's not working out, they've got to deal with this. So yeah, you're exactly right. You can now mute words. But I don't know if they're really – this is one – small thing they need to do on a much larger scale. And I honestly have really mixed opinions about this because at the same time, Twitter is a fire hose of stuff. It's not a blog. It's not Reddit. It is live. It is real time. And for better, for worse, it's live and it's real time. And so what they want to do is obviously limit the attacks that you're talking about. And it's a really tough problem because what they can do is introduce a whole bunch of tools and make it hard to attack people, but then at the same time, they limit their growth. And for them, growth, honestly, I think is more important than harassment. And so what we don't know is that if they can effectively stop the harassment, is that actually going to make the service grow or just make the existing users more happy who are already stuck here because they're not leaving? Yeah. I know that's kind of like a pessimistic look on it, but that's the reality of what they're juggling is they need a higher stock price. They need more revenue. And they need more users. And by limiting user growth, mostly through these harassment channels, that would be what I'm trying to say here is the limiting of the growth would be an adverse side effect to the limiting of the harassment. And so that's what they're trying to balance internally. And I know that's not what everyone wants to hear, but that's effectively what they're trying to do.
So this is a serious question. It's not a rhetorical question. Do you think that there is a serious problem with harassment? And I'm not talking about like you're a jerk type of harassment. I'm talking like
yeah.
really nutty off the wall stuff. Like, do you think that is as serious as it seems to be?
It's definitely an issue. I agree. And I think so what people want, and there's already been some think pieces out there, people want active solutions, and what Twitter is introducing are passive solutions, right? You have to manually go in and filter out words that you don't like. So on one aspect, they're putting the burden on the user that if you have enough people that are harassing you, you can go in there and type words like Trump and you will never see Trump in your timeline. That's an effective thing you have to go do. And the negativity they're getting now is that they want active harassment management, which I think is where they would limit the growth. I'm all about passive controls.
But how do you even do it? That's the question now. Like right? How do you eliminate the harassment? How do you?
What I think they should do, and this would all again have to be opt-in, which makes it passive, unless you want to enable these functionalities. For example, what they could do is anybody who has an egg avatar, not let them, when they do an at message at you, it just doesn't show up for you if you opt into that sort of filtering. Or that they can't, the at mentions will not show up if they have an avatar until they've tweeted 250 times or they're at least their account to A is age 6 months. So that there has to be some sort of mechanism so that you can't go register for an account, have no avatar, no tweets, and then just start harassing somebody. I think they can actively do that. And I think it should, again, be opt-in. But those are the type of basic controls that they could do and really improve the service without doing some sort of drastic things. Like, there were people who were want full user verification before you can actually start tweeting. I'm like, guys, that's not going to work. Like, you can't force someone to do that and expect the service to thrive.
Yeah, you can't say, like, hey, can you scan a copy of your driver's? Like, I had to do that, by the way, for Twitter. By the way, you're verified, right?
Yep.
You have to give them a copy of your driver's license.
Yep.
I'm still waiting for my verification to come through, but it doesn't matter. Like, to me, I'm in the public eye. Like, this is what I'm in. There will be a certain amount of people calling me an idiot. I understand that. And I'm totally comfortable with that. This is my world. This is what I'm putting out there. If you don't like it, it's your right to tell me, Andrew, I don't agree with you at all on this.
Yep.
And I want there to be a dialogue. I want to be told that I'm wrong. Because that's the only way that you grow as a person. But
I agree.
There are moments, like I have had issues with things that have happened, to family members that I have seen, and it's vile.
Yeah.
Just vile stuff. And my talking, my wife is here. Can I have the mail, please? Thank you. She got the mail, everybody.
I don't know about you. The only thing that comes in the mail for me are people who want money.
Yeah, that's all. Well, I'm looking right now. I actually... Some of this stuff is her birthday gift. No, that's all your birthday gift. You do not touch anything. See, that's what I knew would happen. That's why I was trying to get the mail. But you know what I mean? Like, I've had crazy things happen to my wife on Twitter because she used to do shows. She used to be on the air with us. And she's, you know, she changed jobs and she thought that it's time to kind of move on from being a public figure and doing her job.
Yep.
I don't know how you control it. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you... Because YouTube tried to do this, and it didn't happen.
It didn't work at all.
At all. And it really broke the platform to an extent. It was a very convoluted way. So I don't know what the answer would be to stopping harassment and bullying. I don't know if there is a one-off solution. And I don't... I just don't know how to deal with it. I don't know... Like, to me... To me, it's don't engage and it goes away, but that's not the case all the time.
Especially the larger you get. Like, when you look at somebody who's like millions of followers, like they get harassed significantly. And so there are things that they could do. They need to allow the muting of accounts. Like, if you mute an account, it shouldn't, like, let's say you're harassing me and I mute you, it shouldn't show up. Your at mentions for me shouldn't show up for anybody. I wonder how that would go. I don't know. It's like they're trying to tame a riot, really, because Twitter is just constantly being fed information, and it's their job to try to figure out which of those, that one tweet out of a million, and I bet it's honestly not too far from, well, it might be a little higher, but even if it's like 100 tweets out of a million, that's still really hard to actually figure out. So they're never going to be able to fully control it, because, like, let's say I go nuts and I just start harassing somebody. Well, I've had a good account for a long time, and somebody finally blew my gasket. And so they'll never be able to prevent certain things. But I do think that what they need to try to do to be on an active thing is those brand new accounts that are just spun up just to harass, that I think they can kind of knock out. And I think that's what they need to show that they're going to do. And they haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping that they come up with some sort of solution that works for everybody. I don't know what the most realistic thing is, to be honest. Yep. I don't know what'll work for them. Facebook has this problem too, but at least with Facebook, it's, you know, they're kind of a little bit more proactive with like your real name.
Yeah, Facebook's got the issue of fake news. That's what they're dealing with.
Yeah, that's what they deal. Well, I think that's the entire internet now, right? The fake news thing.
Yeah, there was actually a really good post that came. I think it was. I don't know where I read this. It was a Hillary bashing article from the Denver Guardian. Denver Guardian doesn't exist.
That's amazing.
Like
right?
It's only been around. Like that domain has only been around for like 6 months. And somebody like really dove into the Denver Guardian doesn't exist, but it sounds like a real domain
sounds
name.
Like a real, yeah.
And that's it was amazing. Just bashing Hillary Clinton, regardless of what your political viewpoints are. That should not be allowed on Facebook. They should be trying to monitor that stuff, but they fired all of their human editors.
I think it's amazing. I mean, first of all, you know, I think with more education, the more we realize that some of these things are fake and we should further explore certain stories.
Well, you should always, even if I read it, you should always take a little bit of skepticism into anything that you read. You should naturally be a skeptic of something somebody else is trying to tell you until you can verify it yourself.
Hey, Brad, do you have 10 minutes for the wrap up? Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Guys, we're going to wrap it up right now. We started the show an hour early today because I had to replace Paul at the very last minute, and Brad was gracious enough to step in and say, hey, I'll do the show. It's always fun when Brad's here. Brad, where can people find you? Obviously, they know, but let us know again.
Really, the best, talking about contacting, actually, if you're going to reach out to me, Twitter's the best way. I hate email. So just at BD Sams on Twitter. I'm on Threat. I'm on Petri. I'm on YouTube, wherever. It's all the same username, but BD Sams on Twitter is probably the best way to contact.
And Threat.com, of course, sign up for the premium service, $64 a year, $7 a month. Sign up there, a bunch of stuff. Brad does a daily podcast on there with Paul Threat called First Ring Daily.
Yep.
Every day. And then on Fridays, it's the free show. It's live on Fridays.
Yeah.
Great stuff over there. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. Obviously, Paul, you can follow on Twitter at The Rod. You can follow Brad at BD Sams. And remember to subscribe. We're everywhere podcasts are available. We'll see you next time, guys. Take care.